Welcome back. I'm Peter St. Ange. This is a weekly roundup of my daily videos on the economy and freedom, where I cut through the BS and lay out what the gaslighting clowns pulled out of their hats this week and what is coming next. China is in default on over $1 trillion of debt owed to U.S. citizens. And the U.S. government, of course, ignores it. My colleague Andrew Hale recently wrote an article in The Hill detailing how the U.S. pays interest on $800 billion of treasuries held by China. So that's about $50 million per day that we pay to China. Ironically enough, China is currently in default on over $1 trillion in sovereign debt. In other words, they owe us more than we owe them, and they are paying us precisely zero interest. The debt dates from the 1930s, borrowed from private investors and governments, and then defaulted by the Republic of China. After the communists took control, they kept the assets but ignored the debts, which violates centuries of international law. Now, if you take countries' assets, normally you have to take the debts along with it. For context, old sovereign bonds do not just evaporate. As Hale noted in his article, Germany made a reparations payment for World War I in 2010. In 2015, Britain paid bonds issued in the 18th century. In fact, in 1987, the British government did receive payment on their Chinese sovereign debt, the same gold bonds, which they got in return for handing China access to British capital markets. Since, after all, governments in default cannot access foreign capital markets, that is another long-established precedent. The U.S., of course, is a different story. As always, we are the suckers who let it slide because our politicians don't have the balls to enforce American interests when it comes to China. Keep in mind, this is debt owed to American citizens, not to our government, so it's not our government's prerogative to ignore it. By the way, the communists didn't exactly win in China. We gave it to them, at least according to famous economist Gordon Tullock, who actually worked for the thoroughly communist-infiltrated State Department in Tianjin whilst they were handing the country to the communists. According to Tullock, once the war ended, the pro-communist Department of State got the land in Asia, while the anti-communist Department of Defense got the islands, which is why Taiwan and Japan are not communist. The DOD stopped the State Department's communist proxies at the beach, and of course, it reframes the Korean War as a bureaucratic turf battle between state and DOD. So back to the loans, exactly how much are they worth? The debts were gold denominated, which was common before FDR. So today they're worth between $1 trillion and $1.6 trillion. So up to double all of the U.S. debt China holds. Given the debts are not being serviced, of course, they continue accruing unpaid interest, even as the U.S. continues paying China like a chump. So soon enough, they will be $2 trillion. So what's next? If there's one thing Beijing is good at, it is demanding everybody else play by the rules that they themselves ignore. Meanwhile, weak American politicians and media carry China's water, apparently preferring a foreign dictatorship to their own people. It would be a nice change for our government to hold China accountable from trillion-dollar debts to, say, bat virus labs. Of course, that won't happen. So long as Biden's president, we shall remain on our knees. California just slapped a $20 minimum wage on fast food joints. Just days later, they are already announcing mass layoffs. That's in the state with the highest unemployment in the country. The bill, which the Wall Street Journal characterized as, quote, crazy, in an op-ed by a labor economist, raises California's already high minimum wage from $16 an hour to $20. That would make it the highest minimum wage in the country. The bill also sets up a so-called fast food council authorized to raise that minimum wage by another 3.5% every year forever. So it could be 30 in a decade. In response, California food companies have frozen hiring and some are already announcing mass layoffs, starting with delivery drivers who will now be outsourced to DoorDash and Uber Eats, at least until they are gutted by a separate little California gem called AB 40 that aims to destroy those jobs as well. Now, it's worth noting there are currently 500,000 fast food workers in California who are now on the chopping block. Those workers serve roughly 70% of Californians who they get to face higher prices and abandoned locations. Already, approximately 1,100 Pizza Hut drivers are set to lose their jobs, with more already announced at Pizza Chain Roundtable. Of course, the drivers are just a start. At $20, every employee is on the menu. Jack in the Box and Mexican chicken restaurant El Pollo Loco announced they'll be using robotics to automate cooking and cashier functions, including fry stations and making salsa. McDonald's has already put millions into designing fully automated stores, opening their first fully robot store last year in response to minimum wage hikes. So there is no worker in the store at all because machines don't have a minimum wage. Activists claim the companies are just playing games, that there will be no layoffs, which is partly because they've never run a business, but mostly because the minimum wage is a reliable vote winner. It throws workers under the bus, but by gum, it sounds good and it does get the votes. So why does a minimum wage destroy jobs? In short, another way to phrase a minimum wage is a ban on low-skilled work. In this case, any work that is worth less than 20 an hour. Unfortunately, there are many low-skilled workers in America. Thank a public school teacher who simply are not worth $20 an hour. For example, a low-margin broom factory might make money at 14 an hour, but it goes bust at 20. So if they cannot pay 14, there is no job at all. Of course, it's not just that the job is gone, it becomes literally illegal for those people to have any job if they're not worth 20 an hour. They'll either have to make do with cash under the table, perhaps hanging out at Home Depot waiting for day work, or they will have to fall back on soup kitchens, begging, and welfare. So what's next? California is the leading edge of something that's happening all across the country. Indeed, all across the West, sacrificing low-income workers for socialist vote-buying gimmicks. There are 4 million fast food workers in America. There are over 50 million people who make under 20 an hour. All of those workers are now on the chopping block. I'm a big fan of saving Bitcoin for the long term, and the Unchained Bitcoin IRA is a great way to do that. You get the tax advantages, and if it's a Roth IRA, you're not going to pay capital gains so long as you HODL. Most Bitcoin IRAs make you give up control, which can expose you to exchange hacks or even re-lend it out like banks do. With Unchained, you control the keys to your Bitcoin, which means you always know it's there. They also provide one-on-one concierge service to walk you through it and answer any questions. Why pay more taxes than you need to? Set it up today at Unchained.com. Use promo code Peter to get $100 off a Bitcoin IRA. $100 oil could be coming thanks to the Federal Reserve. That would put a gallon of gasoline well into $4 territory, which could send Joe Biden scampering off to the retirement home he should have gone a few years ago. The warning comes from Bloomberg, who puts it on geopolitical tensions from OPEC output cuts to Ukrainian drone strikes on Russian refineries to Mexico slashing exports to feed a very hungry domestic oil market. These have already taken oil to $91 last week before it fell back. The problem is the drones are just the spark. The gasoline is over 30 major central banks, pretty much all of them, are set to slash interest rates in the second half of 2024 in a coordinated push led by the global interest rate mothership, the Federal Reserve. For background, the Fed effectively runs central bank policy for pretty much the entire world. When the Fed hikes, it gives cover for other central banks to hike. When the Fed cuts, they either have to join in or watch their currency collapse like the Japanese yen, which lost fully a third of its value in just the past 3 years. So to say 30 central banks is really just to say the Fed wants to cut. Problem is, it is well known that interest rate cuts drive inflation, setting off a tissue fire of borrowing and spending that drives up the price of everything. In fact, that's the whole basis of modern central banking, to use the interest rate to control inflation. Cut rates to get a little more inflation, hike when you made too much. So toss those 30 central banks into the geopolitical games and it is off to the races. In theory, of course, Joe Biden could just drain the rest of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which he half drained to buy the last election. But that would only go so far if generalized inflation is taking off. Plus, it would mean our ambulances and our military don't have any gasoline in an actual crisis, which was kind of the point of having a strategic petroleum reserve. So why is the Fed cutting rates and driving inflation up? That's been the mystery of the year. I mentioned in a recent video how inflation's actually been rising every month since October. So on an annualized basis, CPI went from 0.9% last October to 1.9% in November, 2.8% in December, 3.5% in January, and 5.4% on an annualized basis in February, the latest number. Normally, that would mean more rate hikes because it would mean the Fed has not done enough to fight inflation. Instead, here we are with a coordinated Fed-led global campaign by 30 central banks to slash interest rates. One possible explanation, of course, is that they're doing it for Joe because Joe Biden needs that tissue fire to get some numbers on the board just until the election. If that's what's really happening, it means we could be in for some serious inflation numbers. In fact, 30 countries worth. So what's next? My biggest fear these past couple years is that we are repeating the disaster of the 1970s, when the Fed financed enough government spending to get us to 10% inflation, then they cut rates too soon and gave inflation a second wind that lasted 5 years, delivering double-digit unemployment that was only ended with the worst series of recessions since the Great Depression. If the Fed follows that script again, we are looking at a repeat of 2022, but this time it could last for years. After years of putting their own people first, the government of Japan is now embracing mass immigration. A few days ago, Bloomberg reported that the number of foreign workers in Japan hit a record 2 million, up a quarter million in just 2 years. That's in a country a third the size of the U.S., so multiply everything by three. The workers are overwhelmingly blue-collar, working assembly lines at factories as 500,000. Construction and retail at 600,000, and services and caregivers at 400,000. Already, some towns in Japan are a fifth foreign blue-collar, which is new in Japan. The Japanese government aims to rapidly accelerate this, bringing in another 300,000 blue-collar immigrants every year through 2040. One pilot program aims at 800,000 starting immediately. Incidentally, this is massively opposed by Japanese voters. Bloomberg cites a 2018 survey that found just 23% of Japanese want more immigration, with voters worrying it could lead to rising crime and, quote, jeopardize security and harmony. Indeed, just a few months ago, the Japanese government announced that crime had risen for the first time in 20 years, something Japanese might need to get used to. So if voters oppose it, who is pushing mass immigration? As in the U.S., it's driven by companies who employ unskilled migrants who would like to pay peanuts and leave the social consequences to others. What Japan's voters do want is for their government to address the flood of Japanese fleeing to other countries because domestic jobs don't pay enough. I've mentioned in recent videos how immigrants don't actually solve labor shortages because they bring their own labor shortage with them. They go to the dentist, they go to restaurants, they need plumbers. Otherwise, America could just annex Canada and have 40 million leftover workers. What mass immigrants do solve is shortages in specific industries, such as low-skill fruit pickers in the U.S. or taxi drivers in Japan. The twist, of course, is that there are plenty of underemployed, low-skilled natives in both America and Japan. So fully 1 in 8 Japanese in their 20s and 30s are not working. That's about 5 million untapped workers. For those in their 50s, it's 1 in 4, so that's another 5 million on top of that. As for Japanese who do have a job, one article last year profiled the typical experience for young Japanese trapped in low-skill and low-paid jobs. 7-Eleven, for example, pays $5.71 an hour in Japan. As the article puts it, those working poor are, quote, happy to just stay afloat, while they, quote, rent until death. So forget starting a family or even saving up for retirement. They are living hand to mouth. Why are those jobs so low paid? Because there is not actually a shortage. And importing 2 million low-skilled foreigners, actually 7 million by 2040, will make them even lower wage. So what's next? The mass immigration industrial complex sadly has reached one of the last holdouts. As in Europe and America, voters do not want it, but special interests write big political checks in Tokyo as much as in Washington. The media will tar any opposition as xenophobia, while the young keep losing hope, looking with envy on the childhood they themselves enjoyed, but are now unable to provide. Do you have an IRA, 401k, or an annuity? Pay attention. A secret war on your retirement is here that threatens your financial future. Consider the years of hard work you've invested in your nest egg, dreaming of a comfortable retirement. Now, imagine it all disappears overnight. This isn't a distant possibility. It's our current reality outlined in a new report from our show sponsor, ITM Trading. Facing collapse, the U.S. economy with soaring inflation, growing national debt, and looming bank crises threatens your retirement accounts. Think the FDIC has you covered? This free report reveals why you're more at risk than you think. We're on the cusp of an economic downturn, potentially rivaling the Great Depression, with your retirement at the forefront of the crisis. Call 866-414-1366 to get your hands on their free report, The Secret War on Your Retirement, that breaks down the current crisis and what you can do to protect your retirement. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and we can thank the Federal Reserve. Last week, the Fed released a new study that wealth of the top 1% in America hit an all-time high of $45 trillion. That's up $15 trillion, or 50% from 2020. So the pandemic has been just about the best thing to happen to America's rich in, about a century. Why? Because the pandemic set off the biggest tidal wave of money printing in American history, pumping out $6 trillion freshly printed dollars in just 2 years. That was roughly one in three of all dollars in existence before the pandemic. That money, of course, pumped directly into financial markets, so stocks gained $10 trillion over the period, stocks capitalized flows, and many trillions more poured into bonds and government debt, treasuries, boosted by Federal Reserve purchases. Why did it go to financial markets? Because that's how the Fed prints money. Sadly, the Fed does not print new dollars on a machine in the basement and hand them out to everybody. Rather, it buys financial assets and it subsidizes bank lending. Quantitative easing is buying assets direct, but most of the new money is actually created by banks, who literally conjure it into existence when they make a loan. And most bank lending goes to richer people. In fact, since the Fed repealed reserve requirements during the pandemic, Wall Street is now free to lend into existence literally any amount their greedy little hearts covet. Once the rich get their money via financial markets and loans, the money then slowly trickles down to the rest of America, often long after prices have risen. This is called the Cantillon effect, and it works like this. A rich guy gets a loan for a swimming pool. The money is spun from nothing, remember, the banks just print it and then charge interest. He takes that fresh money and hires a bunch of workers. He pays them, they go to McDonald's. The McDonald's guy takes his dog to the vet buys a car, the car salesman pays his mom's electric bill. At each step, the new money spreads wider and wider, and it drives prices higher and higher. Now, each person down the line gets their money progressively inflated away. And the last person in line is typically Social Security and pensioners, who get nothing but inflation. Now, normally that Cantillon redistribution is small enough the victims don't notice, but in the pandemic, they printed too much, giving us soaring prices for everything from food to medical insurance to, of course, housing costs. Since the pandemic, the cost of owning the median home in America has doubled, hitting close to $3,000, which is half of median family income. Many cities, if you didn't get a house before 2019, you will never own a house. So the wealthy got their house pumped, and the poor, along with the young, once again missed the boat. So what's next? The Fed driving inequality should not be a surprise. That is the purpose of a central bank. It's why Wall Street bought the Federal Reserve for themselves back in 1914. They did not do it for the little guy. So yes, as long as we have a central bank, the rich will get richer and the poor will get inflation. With the Fed now eyeing a repeat of the 2022 inflation, America's rich should get ready for another big payday and everybody else can get ready for the fallout. Thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe to get next week's episode fresh in your inbox and go to petersaintange.com to read the weekly articles with charts and all the gory details. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.